Okay, so what do you want to talk about in college football today?
Went out to Pullman, Washington. That was a...
So we'll talk about your trip out to Washington State, where you saw Toledo play some kind of football versus the Salukis. Is that what it is?
The Cougars. No, Southern Illinois Salukis.
The Wazoos.
Yeah, Wazoo. The Wazoos, the Cougars.
There you go. Okay, and I mean...
Michigan State.
That game did not have the punch, even though the final score was within two touchdowns.
Three
Bowling,
touchdowns.
31-20?
Oh, that 28-7 for Toledo.
Well, yeah, but Michigan State, Michigan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
31-20, rivalry game, right? Throw the records out, but not really for that one. Not
Bowling
Didn't
Green.
Really hold the interest. Now, I did watch the Bowling Green game.
Experiencing how the other half lives.
Oh, man.
How they know how Toledo felt at Bowling Green. What a collapse.
That was brutal. That was tough. That was tough. And cost me the parlay. We'll do hot seat, okay. But kind of a, we're going to do a special edition. A special edition of hot seat, because I think the hot seat has already seated so many coaches.
Yeah.
We'll look at some in-season firings that have affected our programs.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what we do on the Heart of the Rivalry, the Blades college football show that covers the Ohio State Buckeyes, Michigan Wolverines, Bowling Green Falcons, and Toledo Rockets. Can you do a I'm your host, Phil Kaplan? Let me hear it.
Yeah. And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan.
Is that how I do it?
No, no. And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan.
That was better.
Traffic and weather together on the 10s. Today's show is sponsored by AJ's Automotive.
No, it is not. He's Blade sports columnist Dave Briggs. I am photographer Phil Kaplan and host. And today's show is sponsored by Renewal by Anderson and Dale's Bar and Grill in Maumee. Renewal by Anderson is the window replacement experts backed by over 120 years of quality and craftsmanship from consultation to installation. Renewal by Anderson makes upgrading your home easy, beautiful, and worry-free. And of course, Dale's in historic Maumee, whether you're looking for a table for the whole family or just a bar stool to catch the game, Dale's has you covered with a menu of sandwiches, wraps, and salads. Combine that with 21 beers on tap. And there's something for everyone can enjoy. 21 beers on tap. You would have drank one beer for every point the Rockets lost to. But first trip to the Pacific Northwest, beautiful. Were you enveloped in the swells of the great Pacific mystery?
Yeah, it's. I'd never envisioned going to Pullman, Washington. Actually, stayed in Lewiston, Idaho, which is a paper mill town. I don't know how people live there. It's just a
non-stop
stench.
I
don't know. Have you been to a mill town before?
I have, and it permeates everything.
Right,
you cannot believe people live there. Crazy.
And I'm sure you get desensitized to it after a while, and the land is cheap, and the scenery is beautiful. But yeah, no, fun beyond the game for Toledo. Fun trip. The Palouse is kind of just as far as the eye can see, just kind of rolling golden wheat fields that just huge, I wouldn't call them mountains, but just huge peaks and valleys and just beautiful land.
You love that topography?
It's cool. It's just different.
Yeah.
I could see it getting a little bleak in the winter.
People say that about Toledo, if you can imagine.
I know. We got the water and the greenery.
Kind of.
But interesting place right next to the Moscow, Idaho, where the University of Idaho is 8-9 miles away. So
the Vandals, is that correct?
Towns, Idaho. We actually walked into the Kibbe Dome. You're familiar with that?
I have seen it.
FCS playoffs every year. They have a 16,000-seat dome. It's actually kind of crazy. And the total middle of nowhere in Pullman has a big stadium. Used to be in the Pac-12, obviously, now in exile. Beautiful 32,000-seat stadium. And Moscow, Idaho, which is probably has 10 people, give or take 25,000, as a 16,000-seat stadium. So this is what confuses the Europeans when they look at America. These tiny towns, like, wait, you have a 32,000-seat stadium that's bigger than your town for a college football? Okay, that makes sense. But yeah.
The European mind cannot comprehend, Dave. Cannot.
But for Toledo, I don't know. It's just another confounding chapter in a season full of them. This is the most confusing football season I can ever recall, the distance between the talent and the expectations and what we're actually seeing. think it's just as confounding for Toledo's coaches. Every year, there's kind of a built-in unpredictability kind of inherent in the MAC, and we've seen it with Toledo over the years. But as we've talked about ad nauseum, this year was supposed to be different. And the crazy thing is the metrics suggest this is not a 4-4 team. If you look at Pro Football Focus, you know, they're the ones who grade every single play and every game, and they kind of put together all the advanced analytics. Toledo is the number 10 team in the country still, way ahead of any other team in the group of five. If you look at Bill Connolly's ESPN S&P Plus, that's another top advanced efficiency metric. Toledo is ahead of all the teams they've lost to. They're ahead of Kentucky. They're ahead of Washington State. They're way ahead of Bowling Green and way ahead of Western Michigan. In the four losses, they've way outgained the other four teams. And it's just one of those seasons where it's just kind of like a missed, a dropped pass here, a dumb penalty there, and just a... We can analyze everything, the play calling, the offensive line, the quarterback play, on and on and on. But in the end, it's just a collection of really good players that just does not have the resilience and the fight back to execute when it matters most. And it's just been a strange thing. And I'm sure it's super confounding for the coaches. There's just a clear disconnect. And I think the talent we see on the field, and just as much as Toledo can dominate at times this season, that speaks to the program having a great foundation. It also speaks to the fact that changes need to be made. And I continue to say, I think Jason Candle's a great CEO. He should move into a CEO role and hire someone to focus on the offense.
Any quirky food out there? Any good Washington State Stadium food?
No, I had a good Italian dinner in Moscow, Idaho, Friday night.
That's
because that's where you go.
Wow.
for great Italian.
Is that dinners. A Mad Lib?
I don't know what the food specialty would be necessarily in the middle of nowhere, Idaho.
Well, that's what you were out there on the ground to report. Boots on the ground. You had a good time though.
Yeah, I mean. A little bleak from the Toledo football side of things, but cool to see a new part of the country.
Again, master of the segue. Speaking of bleak,
okay.
How about Kent State Flashes? What'd you see there?
Well, Bowling Green learns how the other half lives there. They know how Toledo felt.
The record is what you said they would be at this time, 3-5. They just didn't take the way they'd go.
Bowling Green up 21-3 midway through the third quarter. I didn't see the win probability chart. Had to be over 95%. Everything's looking good for BG, even with a third-string quarterback in, and then it just kind of all falls apart. And BG fans are kind of melting down. I saw some people say, I'm out on Eddie George era and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah?
That's a good segue to the in-season firings that are happening. By the way,
everybody's favorite.
Before we get to the in-season firings, you know, even Wittenberg fired their coach last week.
Oh, my God.
Freaking Wittenberg. I know they have a proud tradition, but Division III, you're firing coaches mid-season. And the coach, one of the local news accounts, it was just like a very abrupt statement. They're like, was this like, did he do something wrong? Or like, besides not winning enough games? And like the school president said, like, he was fired for substandard performance, like Joe Blow told told WOIO or whatever. And it's just like, wow, this is a cold business if we're even getting into it.
One of the things you see in college football is...
Point is, no one's...
Copycat, right? You see copycat.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you think that because there's been a sort of early rash of major firings that like, people say, well, we can do that. Yeah. You know, it just sort of makes it easier. Well, if they can fire James Franklin, I can fire who's the coach at Wittenberg?
Right.
Joe Wittenberg?
Right. I think of Jim Collins, maybe.
Okay.
We've seen it at Florida. We've seen it now at LSU.
I can't believe they fired Kelly midseason. Now, they had high expectations, and he seems to have always been kind of an extra thumb down there, but that surprised me more than Franklin.
Yeah, both were unsurprising and completely shocking.
That's about right. Yeah, that's about right.
You could kind of see the writing on the wall. Both guys are probably going to need to move on at some point very soon. A lot of these are just vibes. You can tell when a program is done.
The vibe is off.
Tom Amstutz.
Well, hold on. We don't really want to call this a top five because we don't want to glorify it.
No, we're just
not
even a top five. I can only recall three.
Impactful in season firings that we remember. Yeah, okay, so the first one off the top of your head is.
Well, number one would be Earl Bruce in 1987, and I was saying maybe Ohio State should fire Ryan Day before the Michigan game this year, even if they're 11-0 and the defending national champs, just to kind of motivate the boys going into the Michigan game.
Outside the lines thinking, I love it. Get out in front.
when they beat Michigan, if they beat Michigan this year, you just say, we were just kidding. It's just kind of an old motivational ploy, just like.
You're going to furlough him? Secret furlough? But it was such a big deal, and he was relatively successful. And then the wheels off.
Called him 9-3 Earl.
They did.
Great first year. 79, 11-0, losing the Rose Bowl to cost the national title, and then it was kind of all slightly downhill from there. Kind of go again 9-3 every year. Fired in 87 before the Michigan game. Earl Bruce famously comes out. You know, very strict guy. Wears the tie, and he sees everybody wearing the headbands that say Earl, and he's thinking, I don't let these guys wear headbands. Like, what the hell's going on? And then he sees they say Earl, and he kind of warms a old coach's heart, and they go out and beat Michigan in one of the great wins in Ohio State history. So that has to be the number one greatest mid-season firing. Number two greatest mid-season firing. Mike Jinks, Bowling Green. No, we're not.
No, we're not.
These
but these are
difficult.
Impactful moments in history, in our program histories.
Consequential, notable moments. Number two, probably Tom Amstutz in I guess it would be 2008. 3 weeks after Toledo goes to Ann Arbor, beats Michigan 13-10.
Oh my God!
Tom Amstutz is fired.
Toledo Tom.
If you could have those two things in the same season, and that was technically a resignation or agreed to step down at the end of the year. Everybody obviously knew the deal. Amstutz had a great first 4 or 5 years succeeding Gary Pinkel at Toledo, and then it just kind of just made some bad staff hires and. Recruiting got a little wayward, and some of the off-the-field stuff kind of snowballed. But over time, I mean, Tom Amstutz is, of course, remembered fondly as Mr. Toledo Tom.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
Less amicable is number three, and it wasn't unamicable. It was just a complete disaster from the start. Was Mike Jinks getting fired midseason from Bowling Green in 2018. If you remember going back in 2015, Dino Babers wins the MAC title at Bowling Green, leaves for Syracuse. Dino has since been fired at Syracuse. Of course, everybody gets fired. But not a midseason firing.
No.
But anyway, the Bowling Green athletic director then Googles who is the top offensive team in the country. He finds that it's Texas Tech. Okay, who's the top coach I can get off that roster? He gets the running backs coach. That's the top offensive coach that may be willing to come to Bowling Green. So he just willy-nilly hires Mike Jinks, a successful high school coach in Texas who had a couple of years as a running backs coach at Texas Tech. He had never stepped foot in the Midwest, never stepped foot in Ohio. Doesn't matter. Let's hire him anyway. He hires a staff with no connections to the region. It's a complete debacle in every way.
Dave, have you ever been an athletic director?
Disaster year one, disaster year two, fired midway through year three. I might have been guilty of putting a little pressure to accelerate that process.
But do you think that's how coaches are coaching, how you go about hiring a coach?
No, it's not. It's nuts. And there's a little more nuance to that. I got some private pushback on that narrative, but that is true. They looked up who's the best offensive team in the country. Let's try to get the guy on that staff, the offensive side of the ball, who can kind of continue So BG was a high-scoring team under Dino Babers. Want to continue that kind of offense, but there was no fit, no rhyme or reason to anything. The athletic director, Chris Kingston, at the time needed to – it could have worked under different circumstances if you gave him veteran coordinators and a lot of guys with Ohio ties. That's how you needed to recruit, especially at the time at Bowling Green. This was before the era of the transfer portal, so you need to have that radius and those connections and kind of that – 4 or 5 states around Ohio. Nothing more needs to be said. It was just a total disaster.
We will take the burner out from under the hot seat to cool it down. This has been everybody's, this year's first edition of everybody's favorite segment of Hot Seat. That's pretty good, Dave. So for the first weekend of the whole year, I did not just watch college football. On Saturday, I went up to Detroit and I saw David Byrne, an evening with David Byrne. Oh, cool. You're a Talking Heads fan at all?
I'm not, but I know him well. I mean, I know.
I mean, as a journalist, you have to be aware of what Talking Heads is, you know, just because it's a commentary on news.
Where was that?
It was at the Fox Theater.
Cool.
It was cool.
Good crowd.
It was cool. You know, he it was a part art performance and part musical performance, okay. Right? He played some Talking Heads, played some stuff off his new album, but he had a lot of people on stage and they were all mic'd to be independent.
Okay.
So it was almost like if you had a crossover of a super elite college marching band and like the theater program came together to do something, because everybody was just like on their own, walking around in their little suits. Nothing on FAU, but, you know, it was cool.
And so then you went to Chelly's, the Chris Chelios' bar next door, to watch the World Series game afterward?
I did listen to it on the way home.
Did you go to a bar in downtown?
I went to Bar Pigelle, which is, you know, it's also a fun place to park and walk to the theater.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of fancy, but they have a great cheeseburger. Trust. And so I'm wearing the shirt here, which I will believe would make me the only person to be wearing a David Byrne shirt to be talking about college football on a major podcast.
Very cool.
Major show.
Have you been to Oregon?
Beautiful
or Washington
country out there.
Or?
I have.
Really?
In fact, I have.
Washington?
I've been to Astoria, Washington.
Have you been
to Portland, Oregon?
Idaho?
I've been to some smaller towns out there.
Idaho?
And it was a long time ago. I was doing... was my first paid journalism job, and I was freelancing, and I was working for like what was called Pencil News. It was kindergarten to like third grade.
Okay.
And I and a friend were paid to retrace the steps of Lewis and Clark.
Oh, okay.
So
that's
we
cool.
did that on this like 3-week odyssey.
Did you go through Missouri?
We did.
Yeah, okay.
Now,
I remember.
We also went through parts of Idaho, and we stayed one night at this small Idaho town.
Okay, okay.
That had a paper mill in it. I cannot remember the name of it, so I cannot say whether it's Lewiston or not.
Yeah.
But we woke up in that town, and we were just, this is awful.
That's crazy. Did you go down the Missouri River at all?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Now, that was like through Columbia.
We weren't truly like Lewiston
or Clark. Jefferson City.
We had a RAV4.
Okay, okay. Did you ever go on the river for anything, or?
We swam in the river.
Okay, okay. But you were kind of driving adjacent to the river.
That's right.
Okay, nice,
that's
nice. Right. Did you go to Jefferson City, Missouri?
We did, and sometimes a little too close. Our vehicle may have not been as off-road ready as we had wished it to be.
We've all been there with our golf carts.
The Lewis and Clark Expedition, as well as Dave's golf cart training program, and the Heart of the Rivalry are all brought to you by Renewal by Anderson and Dale's Bar and Grill in historic Uptown Maumee. Catch all the college football action as well as NFL and MLB playoffs at Dale's, one of the premier Buckeye bars in Northwest Ohio. Wolverines still welcome. And of course, Renewal by Anderson. If you are ready to transform your home with Renewal by Anderson, buy one window or door and get another 40% off, but only through the end of the year. Schedule your free consultation today at renewalbyanderson.com. What is coming up on the docket this Saturday? We got two teams that are basically off.
Yeah. Which game are you going to, Phil?
I'm going down to my first Ohio State game of the season, potentially only Ohio State game of the season, which is the luster has come off.
A little bit.
But I will be in person to see the James Franklin-less Nittany Lions play the vaunted Ohio State Slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Going with my dad. He's...
Tickets have come down a little bit.
I can imagine. My dad has tickets, but he doesn't go to every game like he used to. I'm looking forward to spending time with him. Hopefully it'll be just a beautiful fall afternoon. We've had a lot of that.
What do you think about Ohio State as just a 13.5-point favorite? Ohio State's just been mowing through everybody.
I think that's so that Penn State's, I can make money to buy dinner for my dad.
Penn State's lost four games in a row. They've obviously fired their coach. Yeah, what a crazy game. I mean, this has always been in the entirety of the Franklin era, it was always more than half the games were decided by a touchdown or less. You figured this had a chance to be pretty much what Ohio State Indiana is looking to be in the Big Ten title game, 1-2. And yeah, Penn State is definitely the shocker of the football season so far. And Ohio State's equally in opposite extremes. Ohio State's coming off an open date. I guess Penn State's coming off an open date too, but Penn State, their backup quarterback, Ohio State's defense, just an absolute machine. It's hard to imagine Penn State moving the ball. I don't see this one being close. I think this is just another one in Ohio State's kind of destruction tour leading up to Michigan and the Big Ten title game. But we'll see. Vegas usually knows. Now they don't, but they do. I think they're trying to tease a lot of money on Ohio State.
So sometimes they do. Do you think this is the rally around the interim coach game?
I don't know.
For the Nittany Lions,
they lost their
only lose by 10.
That's possible.
It's a game in the fourth.
Do they carry the interim coach off the field if they lose their fifth straight game, but only lose by 11.5?
Instead of the Gatorade bucket, just a cup. Yeah. Just a cup of water. Good job.
Present the game ball.
Okay, so Michigan
hosting Purdue.
Purdue could be the worst team in the Big.
They're not good, Bob.
But Michigan, like you said, in the cruise control part of their schedule, basically just sharpening knives until they meet the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I don't see them I don't see really a chance for them to lose until at Maryland the week before the game, and even that, Michigan will be a sizable favorite.
Maryland has some spunk, but
they don't. They're great in September every year, not so much in October and November.
September champs.
The Michigan State game was interesting. Didn't get to see much of it as we were driving through. I was driving up to Spokane for the flight on Sunday morning, but Bryce Underwood, a little sketchy. I think 8 of 17, 86 yards.
Justice Haynes
lackluster,
back,
but yeah, the two-headed running monster of Justice Haynes back, 150 plus yards, 2 touchdowns. Jordan Marshall, that's as good of a 1-2 punch as you'll see in the country. That'll have to be their ticket against Ohio State if they can move the line and get the run game going. We've said this in past games, I don't think Michigan's offense is dynamic enough against Ohio State's just absolutely suffocating defense, but stranger things have happened. It is in Ann Arbor, and you get Michigan a little confidence. If they go into that game 9-2, who knows? It'll be fun.
At this point, it also looks to be they will be the best two running backs that Ohio State will have faced up to that point in the year.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's a rivalry. Then we
got Bowling Green hosting Buffalo, and I was just Bowling Green is 3-5 now. This is their remaining schedule. You got to win 3 of the final 4 games to get to bowl eligibility.
Buffalo's,
and certainly
4-4.
Buffalo 4-4. They were thought to be better. They're kind of having a little bit of a disappointing season, like Toledo. So host Buffalo at Eastern Michigan, which is 2-7. Host Akron, which is 3-5, and then at UMass, which is 0-8. I think you would like to. I'd say if you win 3 of those 4, it's a successful season. Again, down to your third string quarterback. The staff hired in March. Entire team is new. I know fans are down on Eddie George at the moment, but think of the excitement he's generated this year. The jury is still out. I'm still completely in, and if you can get to a bowl at 6-6, I think that's the most you could have expected.
Even if
Scott Loeffler had been the coach this year, they were due for a major step back. So that's all you can ask for this year, and I think that's a toss up. That's probably their hardest remaining game on Saturday, home against Buffalo. So we'll see, and then Toledo is off this week, but they begin Maction against Northern Illinois. And God, I feel bad for the Toledo administrators who had the awesome idea and this kind of galvanized the community. They had called Mission Midweek. They want to sell out the Glass Bowl. Obviously these midweek Maction games are pretty empty stadiums usually, and they wanted people to turn on ESPN2 and see a full Glass Bowl. the plans began back in the spring, and Toledo was supposed to have one of the best G5 teams in the country, and Northern Illinois is one of their big traditional rivals. It's the last meeting against Northern Illinois before NIU goes to the Mountain West. So everything was falling into place, and then the season started, and it's just been the worst possible luck for marketing this. Toledo's 4-4. Northern Illinois is 2-6. I think they'll have a much better crowd than they would have. And again, great idea to kind of show Toledo in the best light and show Toledo proud of its hometown university. But I don't know. It's going to be really dependent on the weather. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how many people are there.
I will be there.
And I mean, I'm calling for, you know, it would be cool, regardless of the record. Let's show it. Let's show the pride for the University of Toledo. Show the pride for the city. Pack the place. I just don't know how realistic that is when you can market. You can be the best marketers in the world. You got to win.
This is the game that Toledo wins.
Oh, of course. It's at home against them. Oh, absolutely.
This is the one that they
win. Yeah. I mean, they'll probably win by, 52-10. No, seriously.
Should we record on Wednesday next week?
Sure.
So we'll be able to recap.
Yeah, good call.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay. Ohio State's going to score 800 points. Okay.
But so is Penn State going to score 790 then to cover?
No.
Okay.
No. I think BG wins ugly. What do you think about that?
Like a
Browns win. Like a 13-9, just hideous.
I see it. It's hard. It's hard with the third string quarterback. We'll see if Drew Pine, the starter going into the season. I believe he dressed but didn't play against Kent State. Hopefully for Bowling Green's sake, he's ready. Yeah, I can see it. Back up against the wall, grind out a win at home.
The last play of that game, and I get that they'd already given it. The worm had already turned.
Yeah.
But they're at midfield, and they were going to do pitchy woo-woo.
Yeah,
you're going to do a hook and ladder, and the ball went out of the hands. You know, so your last play of the game is just basically a throw into the sidelines.
Yeah.
That's why you got to throw the Hail Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
And I needed that, Eddie. I needed that.
I know. I don't bet on our teams, but may I ask how much you would have won with this parlay?
Almost tens of dollars.
Okay,
It would have been in the upper tens of dollars.
Would you have been filming this podcast if you had won?
I don't think it's stepping out money. I think I would have been here. But I would have been sitting on top of the table.
Love it. Love it.
All right, Dave. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Report on Tuesday.
Sounds great.
I'll see you at the Glass Bowl.
You should come. Maybe I'm shooting.